Classic Hits WTYE. Good morning from the Ubelar and Sons Buick GMC Classic Hits Studio. It's time for another edition of Civic Interest. And in studio, I've got Chief Weaver and also Superintendent Quicken with me. How are you gentlemen doing this morning?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Very well, Tony. Thank you.
I appreciate both of you taking some time to come in and talk with us about a sensitive subject, to say the least. But I wanted to have you guys come in and talk a little bit about, we've had two threats against the schools in a relatively short amount of time, one at the middle school, one at RHS. And let's talk a little bit about what people can expect from the school when something like this happens, kind of advice for parents that might be concerned, because, you know, as a parent, we're all three parents in here, and as a parent, I can't imagine getting that notification from my kid that there's been a threat at school. My first reaction is going to be to panic and go into Papa Bear mode and, you know, want to bum rush the school. That's not the best way to go. Talk a little bit about what people should expect when something like this happens. And feel free, either one of you, just jump in here and let's get this started.
Okay, thank you, first of all, Tony, for having us, and we appreciate an opportunity to kind of talk about what our response is, how the school district and law enforcement and other first responders work together. And, you know, the points that you've made so far are absolutely correct. We can all identify as parents when you hear that news that a threat has been made. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is these things are becoming more common. They've hit home here in our community twice, as you said, in the last couple of weeks. And a couple of important things that I want to put out there, first of all, are that every one of these is taken seriously. Everything is investigated, no matter what, how minor it seems, whether it seems bogus from the beginning or whether, you know, we get into it. And but every one of them has to be taken seriously and is taken seriously, both by the school district and by law enforcement. Now, with that being said, you know, the two situations that we've dealt with here recently have been somewhat different, and it kind of gives us an opportunity to explain what that response looks like, because in our safety planning, what we've learned over the years and many years of doing this is that you can't plan for every eventuality. So, one of the things that I like to say in working with our first responder partners, who are great partners, we are so blessed in this community to have the expert advice that we do enjoy. We have to have options, because you never know how a situation is going to unfold. So it can't just be if X happens, you do Y. There are a lot of variables that play into an active situation, and you have to be prepared to go down, you know, different paths depending on what information you get and when you get it.
Well, and I think you're right on the money here, and particularly as you mentioned these two incidents. One was a very specific threat by a very specific individual. The other was a bit more ambiguous, I think, was the term that was used in the press release. And so, Chief Weaver, I'm going to assume then your approach to both of those situations is going to differ slightly, because one is known and one is unknown.
Yeah, it definitely elicits a different response from us. And like Josh said, we work really closely with the school, and it's not necessarily one of us doing the investigation or the other. It's always immediately a joint effort, and both of us trying to figure out the seriousness of it and what whether the threat is credible, whether it's not. Most of the time, these are not credible. However, like Josh said, we begin assuming that they are all 100% credible, and then we work to disprove that. And the work that we're both entities are doing, both the school and law enforcement, anybody else that's involved, is the safety of the students and the kiddos. That's what we're all in it to protect and make sure that they're the safest. And everything that we do is kind of hinged off of that. Whether it's notification, locking down a building, or evacuating a building, or whatever we're doing because based on our investigation or what we've perceived to the validity of the threat is how we respond. So,
well, and that's part of, I think, the part of the frustration for parents is because there isn't a cut and dried, I know that anytime this happens, X, Y, and Z is going to happen. That is not necessarily the case, and I think some of the frustration is perhaps born out of maybe a misunderstanding that it cannot be that cookie cutter for every situation.
And I think maybe the best analogy that some parents may be able to wrap their head around a little is bomb threats from, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, when somebody would not want to have to take a test in biology that day. They would call in a bomb threat, and then the school would go through their protocol as far as how to handle that thing. And the difference being is a bomb threat is a very specific thing, and you handle it a very specific way, whereas the threats that we're investigating in today's world are completely varied, all the way from something tangible and relevant from a student who maybe we know something about, to a swatting call that comes in from outer Missouri or somewhere else that has nothing to do with our school, and then we have to look through all of those. So it's similar in that we're trying to disrupt the students as little as possible while making sure they're as safe as possible, only knowing what we know at any given time.
Yeah. Well, and you referenced something that I'd like you to expound on a little bit. Swatting is a term that has gained prominence in the last several years. Not necessarily a new concept, but something that it seems to be in the vocabulary a bit more. Talk a little bit about what swatting actually is.
So to just give a real general brief description of it, swatting is, and we'll use just the context of the school for the description of it, is a school receives a threat, usually a very specific threat of some sort, from somebody that doesn't have anything to do with the school at all, or maybe only a very veiled connection to the school, that they know somebody at the school, but it's not a credible threat at all. There's no actual threat of harm. I mean, the kids aren't in any danger. But so, say, for example, I were to call out to a school in California and pick one on a map and make a call out there and tell them that I'm going to be there to do some harm to the school at a specific time or something along those lines. And now that school is left with a threat, like I said at the beginning, that they have to treat as being credible and start working through the process. And ultimately, we end up finding out where the call came from or who made it and investigate. That takes a law enforcement turn that way as far as investigation. But it's a disruption to at least the administration staff of the school and law enforcement, because they do have to treat it as valid. So that's what swatting is, compared to some of the other things that we've dealt with, where it's a student at the school or it's somebody in the community or something like that. That's a different situation than what we would consider a swatting call.
Okay. Well, Josh, talk a little bit about the lines of communication. Obviously, again, it's a fluid situation, and there is information that can be released. There's information that can't yet be released because it's an ongoing investigation. What can parents of Unit 2 students expect in the future, as best you can? Again, not to commit you to an A, B, and C of it, but what might people expect? How might they expect it to unfold from a school level?
Yeah, absolutely, Tony. I appreciate you bringing up that issue. And and I want to respond to that question, but it kind of as a backup to that, every time something like this happens, we do have a process for evaluating our actions and, okay, here's what happened, here's what we knew at this time, here, this is how we responded according to, you know, the plans and the tools that we have in place. One of the things in retrospect with this most recent thing that I feel we could have done a better job with is the communication piece. And when you're in the heat of the moment and a lot of resources are focused on the investigation and the immediate response, the communication piece got away from us pretty quickly in this particular instance. It happened during the school day. It spread very quickly among the student body and then out into the community, via contacts with parents and with social media. And there is definitely, that's something that we learned from this situation, is that at some point, even though we were heavy into the investigative side of things, part of our plan is the communications, and that did not happen as quickly as I would have liked in this particular situation. And it's not a blame.
Right. It's unfortunately, it's part of the learning curve because, you know, as we've mentioned, every one of these instances is a little bit different and has to be approached a little bit differently. So, certainly no blame. It's an opportunity to learn in the future. I know, Chad, you and I've talked before, even when we're talking simple, an accident, you've told me before, hey, text me at some point as a reminder to reach out to you with the information, because in the moment, I'm in the middle of things and you know, it hurt my feelings a little bit when you said I wasn't the first thing you were thinking about. But
you're on my list. You're just not at the top.
I'm on the list. It's not at the top. So, I mean, it's that kind of idea that first and foremost, the first thought is making sure the kids are safe and communicating what's going on. Again, on the list, but not necessarily at the top of the list.
And I think something that goes to that, too, is both the school and the law enforcement, we have a limited set of resources. There's only so many of us that can do so many tasks at any given situation. And we do prioritize. We triage a little bit. Okay, what is the most important thing we need to be dealing with? And we tackle that. And as soon as it's practical that we can, we get the information out to and what we would like people to do, and kind of speak to that, is to the limited resources. You know, in this particular instance, we had some people showing up to get their kids, and I completely understand that. And, you know, as a parent, if my kid is with me, I feel the safest. Except that if in a larger situation, if a bunch of parents are showing up to get their students and we're trying to investigate or mitigate this threat or situation, we now have to divert our resources to this reunification that's going on at a spot that's potentially where the problem is. And in our responses, one of our potential responses is to relocate students to a different location and reunify with parents there. So to use an example of like a gas leak, so if there was to be a gas leak at the high school right now, we don't want a bunch of parents showing up to get their kids from the high school because it's unsafe. Right. We're going to move those students to another location and then tell the parents where to pick them up there. So in some situations, I think getting kiddos back with their parents is a really good solution, except that we have a plan how to do that with accountability, with safety in mind, and much prefer to do that.
Well, and I think, too, you know, to that end, the topic of active shooters, of school threats, anytime you think of a threat at a school, that's unfortunately right now what people are thinking of. They're thinking of an active shooter. But these scenarios and these plans you have in place could be from anything, like you mentioned, a gas leak or a fire. Or, I mean, a lot of this can be applied to any number of scenarios. It's just, unfortunately, the active shooter threat is top of everyone's mind right now.
And that's one of the problems that we run into is with the social media telephone game, where the word spreads via social media from somebody heard it from somebody. By the time it gets to maybe a parent, they've heard something that's not entirely true. And we may have locked down the school because an ambulance is needing to come get a student who's had a seizure. Or there's lots of reasons we may lock down. And if everybody only relies on the information that they've heard from social media, it may be inaccurate at best. And we try to plan for these worst case scenarios, but like you said, we've planned for that. It works for everything else all the way down. And that's why when we can, we try to get the message out as quickly as possible. So everything's going snap on social media needs to be taken with a grain of salt.
And you know, a great example of that is it hasn't been that long ago. We had someone escape from the courthouse. And that prompted a lockdown of the schools, not because there was a threat at the school, but because you wanted to eliminate the possibility of a threat at the school. So again, what you hear on social media should be taken with a grain of salt. And honestly, the information you get from your student at the school should be taken with a bit of a grain of salt, because again, they're playing the, well, so-and-so told me such and such, and it may not be 100% accurate.
That's true in some cases, and but I do want to make clear the point that I think some of this could have been prevented had we diverted some of our resources toward the communication side a little bit earlier, and that's one of the things that we're taking away from this. Yeah. You know, we learn from every situation that happens. We learn from situations that happen other places. Anytime that that there is an emergency response somewhere, we have a conversation with our emergency planning partners. About, you know, is there something that we can learn from this? And and I think that's important. We can't just say, okay, here's our plan, and we're never going to touch it or review it again.
Well, and that's the thing, too. All of these plans, even the plans themselves, are fluid, and they're constantly in flux. And you're adding parts that work, subtracting parts that didn't. It's kind of the nature of the beast. I appreciate both of you coming in and talking with these this morning. Is there anything else either of you want to mention, a point you want to make before we wrap things up?
No, I'm good. I appreciate you having us in here. And like Josh said, this is a ever-changing thing, and we're constantly working on it and trying to be better. And And it, everybody is working for the safety of the kids, and that, I mean, that's paramount.
Yep, I absolutely agree with that. That's what we want as school officials. That's what law enforcement wants. And obviously that's what our parents and our community want, right, as well, is reassurance that their students are safe at school. And, you know, we will learn from this situation in terms of the communication piece and make sure that we can provide that reassurance as early as possible. If, and I hope, you know, I hope this doesn't happen.
Yeah, hopefully we never have to have this conversation again, and it's never an issue. But you have to always plan for the worst.
Absolutely, and we will be prepared for that.
All right. Well, I appreciate you guys coming in and talking with us this morning. And if anybody missed this civic interest, or you want to go back and listen to it again, I will be posting it up on our website, WTYEFM.com, and we'll push the link to it out on social media. Again, I appreciate you guys coming in and talking with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
That will do it for this edition of Civic Interest on Classic Hits WTYE.